This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome to the RuPaul's Drag Race Recap Show for Season 14, Episode 1, titled Big Opening Number 1. My name's Joe Batanz, and I am joined, as always, by one magniloquent co-host. First, from the podcast pod is my co-pilot. Please say...
Sometimes I feel like I'm just swallowed in the darkness that's in my head.
To Taylor, the latte boy. Taylor, the latte boy, I have to give it to you. I didn't think you were going to be able to join me for that parody song.
I've been practicing me, and yeah. and was glad I was able to join you on that collaboration.
Thank you very much. Taylor, latte boy, how are you? Nice to hear the dulcet tones of Taylor, latte boy back on the Afterthought Media airwaves.
I'm excited.
You always
we'll start see how
excited.
I am by episode. We'll see how yeah. I am by episode 8, but I'm excited now.
Yeah, when an episode 8 when you're like, we're only halfway done.
There's still 17 girls. How are we 8 episodes in and there's still 17 girls?
Well, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised to see they eliminated someone today, even though like I'm suspicious.
I'm curious to your theories.
I don't have any theories. I'm just suspicious. I don't trust them.
We've experienced PTSD where we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah,
loud noises. We both have a hyper startle experience.
Yeah, where it's gonna be like RuPaul decided it was all a dream and she brought all the girls back or something like that. Oh God! By the way.
That's how we're starting the season. Yeah, oh God.
That's how we're starting. You know, believe it or not, I have an Orion story.
Already?
I already have an Orion story, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I might know what it is, but I
think on my Twitter post?
Yes.
Oh yeah. I know. I have it interactive. Well, yeah. Let me talk about it now.
Okay.
This Orion story on her in our Twitter, she wrote something about how, oh, this RuPaul chocolate bar. Like, I'm craving it. I love chocolate. I need this chocolate bar. Going on and on about the RuPaul chocolate bar, the $11 chocolate bar, right? And so I just wrote, I just replied. I was like, oh, no, is it going to be a whole season of this shit? They're all talking about how amazing the RuPaul chocolate bar is, right? Well, you know what I need to do? I need to go get one of these chocolate bars, and I'm going to try it on the air. And I'm going to tell you if it's good chocolate or not.
Where do you get them?
I know you can get them in L.A. I think there's a World of Wonder store or something around here. I don't know. It used to be where you could get them. In the early days, they'd always have drag queens doing meet and greets to go buy the chocolate. If you bought a chocolate bar, you got to, you know, meet Madame LaQueer or something. But... Who, by the way,
for $11, that's too much.
But then they'd be like, wait a minute, who ate all the chocolate? And Madame LaQueer would be there, like, with chocolate all her mouth, going like, ew! Did you mean Beaver or? It was a whole thing. Anyway,
3 minutes and we're already making fat jokes. Okay,
yeah. Which, by the way, she's lost a tremendous amount of weight. Very proud of
her.
Has she? Yeah. I remember I went to one of the finales. You know, that's always the awkward thing with the finales is, you know, you go and you see these queens. You're like, oh, my God, there's Mrs. Kasha Davis. Especially when, you know, when I go, like, I go in the special, you know, hoi polloi. I don't say hoi polloi. Yeah. So yeah. I'm sitting there with, you know, like Manila and all the. And then at the end, when you're leaving, when everyone, that's when it becomes equal, and you know, like, and this James Mansfield tried to get an Uber, right? I just remember walking by, and Madame Lequeer's just randomly standing there waiting for someone to pick her up. I don't know who it was. It was just sad. It was sad. It was just this poor Madame Lequeer, no one to pick her up. Anyway, by the way, Taylor.
Yes.
As you know, we have a Patreon, you know.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, it's so good, this Patreon. People love this Patreon. And, I'm always talking about, and this is true. If you join the premium level, you get this show live, commercial free, like two or 3 days early. You get it. You get so much just for that $5. But I think one of the things, I think you can talk about this, and this is one of the things that people tell me privately, you know, on the Discord, is, and I don't think I sell this enough, is what an amazing, amazing community we have here at Afterthought Media. And I'm going to be honest with you, it's one of the things I'm proudest of. I'm being honest. People who interact with them will tell me privately that how amazing that community is. Taylor is very bitchily drinking something from a straw as if I'm telling bullshit.
No, I'm not. I'm just drinking. I'm trying to not like rattle the coffee into the microphone. So
he did
I was
in a very shady way.
Very
anyway,
because I'm sitting on a straw and listening to you and reading the Discord. I'm reading what people are writing right now. This is how you want to start the season?
Fuck off. I quit. Now, anyway, so.
Fuck off. I'm gonna go well, back. Guys, that's the end of Shitty Pines. Goodbye.
We had a host on our Golden Girls podcast, and the season one quit in the middle of the show. Wait, no, wait. Actually, in theory, he didn't. The other one
quit
did.
At the end of the show.
Yeah, the other one did.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you guys, again, this is the big plug for Patreon. There is so much drama and all this nonsense that goes on Patreon that the people on the public feed never hear about. Right?
Right.
They just hear these shows. They don't know that, you know, people are quitting and having tantrums on the air, including me. I'll have a tantrum on the air once a year. There's the yearly Joe Batanz tantrum where people are blocked and all this stuff. But you know who doesn't? The community is so amazing, so welcoming, so wonderful. And by the way, they don't just talk about Drag Race. There's myriad topics that they talk about on the Discord, ranging of all kinds of reality television and music and food and their lives. And it's actually it's wonderful people. And I stress it specifically because, look, we're just a small fraction of the Drag Race fandom, but we're a nice drag. If you go on this Reddit or Twitter, they're hateful bitches on there. And we don't seem to have that at Afterthought.
No. Other than Lori.
Yeah, Lori and me, you know. The people on the shows are the ones who are the hateful bitches, but the actual community is nice. I'm going to try and bring them on to like talk about it. But yeah. So if you want, if you have no friends and you're lonely during this pandemic, $5 is all actually just $3 if you join at the basic level, but $5 you get this show early, commercial free, live shows. And then you can choose to go up from there too. Go over to patreon.com/afterthoughtmedia and join at that level. Taylor, you've been well. It's been a few months since we've seen you. Everything good?
Yeah, no, things have been really good. Work was really nuts, pardon the pun, through the holidays. I work in mental health, so given everything that's going on in the world, it was a little, but things seem to have settled down a little bit. And I'm glad to have, I took a break from obviously both this show, but also Pod is my co-pilot. We took our usual winter hiatus and we're slowly starting to get back into things. And
oh, you just reminded me. Yeah, go ahead.
Looking forward to having a very productive year. I started walking and exercising again. You kept me company yesterday for my walk. You kept me company for 3 miles yesterday. We were talking on the phone, and I was scaring neighbors when I was throwing my head back and laughing at some of the things you were saying. So always enjoyable.
You know what we should have talked about that you just reminded me of right now? Guys, What a prima donna this Taylor Latte Boy is. Do you know, Taylor, I don't think you know this, that for us to do the show this season to accommodate Taylor, we need two producers. We have two producers of Drag Race Recap now. We have Zach and Luke are both, which I gotta tell you, and I'm telling you this now, Taylor, in public, and I'm telling everybody, but I told them privately already. I was so impressed by both of them last night. So everyone knows, Taylor, and I want to explore this a little bit, just a little bit, because we got to get into this show. I want to explore this just a little bit. This is my perception, okay?
Okay.
This is what you do, okay? On Friday night, you and your husband cuddle up and watch RuPaul's Drag Race.
Correct. Okay.
Yeah. Which you would do anyway, regardless of whether you did the show.
Right.
And then you go about your life, and then you wake up in the morning and have your coffee. And what do you have for, like, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
I have, well, I'm drinking a Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee, sugar light cream, and I had a coffee roll.
Okay. And then you turn on your microphone and you chat with your buddy for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
Then you turn off the microphone and you never think about the show again until next Friday night when you, with your, what you would do anyway, watch the show with your husband. Guys, every year it is negotiations. Like, oh God, I don't know. I don't know if I could do this show. I don't know. To the point where I have to get two producers because he was like, if I don't do it Friday, because he wanted to do it Friday night. And I'm like, that's impossible for me to make that happen. But I'll wake up. I woke up at the butt-ass crack of dawn, which I don't mind. I should wake up early. And it was not even light. There was darkness. But like last night, we have our elves. Luke is like Stephen J. Cannell after the episode. He's like typing the outline and throws the paper in the air.
After an episode of Hardcastle and McCormick.
Yeah. After Hardcastle and McCormick, or like, did he do the one with the fat guy in the wheel? This Cannon? Did he do Cannon?
I don't think he did. I know he did Hunter.
A-Team.
On an A-Team. And did he do Mag P.I.?
He may have. I don't know.
Yeah.
But for people younger than 45 years old, Stephen J. Cannell was a TV producer. And at the end of every episode, there was a video of him typing on a typewriter. And then he would rip the paper out of the typewriter and throw it in the air. And then an animated version of the paper would float onto a pile of pages.
That would then turn into a C that would show Cannell Productions. Yeah.
So
there's a GIF of that will end up in the Discord soon, I am sure.
So, but that's what I'm saying. Like, Luke has to do that, and then Zach has to run by like Jimmy Olsen and catch it, and then he's running and he's like typing, you know, like they've now become the Woodward and Bernstein of the show, right?
You offered to, okay, and I, when we had this conversation, I was in the car. Yeah. Driving probably to Target with my husband in the car. And I purposely, when he started to say something, I put like, don't say anything because I want to witness to the fact that we had this conversation and you offered without me saying I need to do it at like 9:30 my time.
Well, no. I've never said that you said we had to do it early.
Okay.
But it's like, Jordan Darling in the Discord Darling has found
the GIF.
I'm watching it right now. That's. But I will say, my entire life, I've never noticed you did that. The pages form a C. I never noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that was Luke yesterday, right in the outline. They're making it look like the Stephen J. Cannell is like writing like Shakespeare. It was a horrible, these horrible shows about like, you know, like B.A. Baracus having to eat like a hamburger that was full of like sleeping pills because he didn't want to get in an airplane. You know, like horrible shows.
There are all these just horrible procedural cop dramas.
Yeah.
Of a grizzled veteran.
Yeah. All these people, these rejects. Anyway, what have we turned into, Taylor? This is what this show is about. But anyway, like, even now, and I don't want to get too much into Taylor's personal life, because now I thought about it this morning. I'm like, so now I'm letting you off the hook. I was like, oh, it's not Taylor. It's the husband.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Anyway, guys, it was so many we were like at Malta, you know, trying to negotiate a peace agreement to get Taylor to do this show. I'm like, what's so hard about it? Anyway, this week, seven queens sashay into the workroom and compete in a freaky photo shoot. Next, the queens showcase their skills in the Charisma, Nerve, and Talent show. In the end, Cornbread is named the winner of the challenge, while June Jambalaya and Orion Story are placed in the bottom two. After a lip-sync battle for their live, June is told, Shantae, you stay, while Orion Story is asked to sashay away. Taylor the Latte Boy, go ahead and name two things you liked about the episode and one thing you did not.
I walked away from this episode very happy.
Okay.
I was glad to see one of the things that I liked is that it felt like a regular premiere. Mm-hmm. It wasn't all of the twists and turns. I mean, the closest that we come to it being a twist was that it was only the first seven girls. Mm-hmm. But you and I have talked extensively about one of the reasons that we think season six is as beloved and such a great season is when they did that for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved that there was that. And I loved that somebody went home at the end of it. It wasn't the way we've done it the last couple of times with the top two girls doing the best and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, that was one of my favorite things. One of the other things I loved, I can sum up in three words.
Yeah.
Cornbread, cornbread, cornbread.
Now, what about the drag queens? Do you have any thoughts on the show?
Oh, I liked her too. I liked her too. But I fell in love in the Meet the Queens and was pleasantly, because sometimes you see the Meet the Queens and you don't get the right perception.
Yeah.
I feel like we're getting what we see with Cornbread, and I'm here for it. I absolutely loved her through the entire thing. My husband laughed through any time that she said anything funny, like he was belly laughing and just really, really great. The thing that I did not like was, and unfortunately I have a feeling we're going to see this for at least a little while, and that is Willow Pill.
Oh.
RuPaul saying her name that way. Willow Pill is going to be the Ivy Winters of this season.
But not the drag queen. You're talking about the way RuPaul says her name.
Not the drag queen. The way Ru is saying her name is super annoying. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I did not like. How about you?
What I'm going to say right now, the first thing I'm going to say, I can already hear what you're going to say. It's like I have a whole movie in my head. Where I'm going to say this, and you're going to be like, I turned to Babalu and I said blankety blankety blank, right? This Alyssa Hunter as a boy is so fucking hot.
Okay.
That's the first thing I like. That's it.
I'm not arguing that point.
I will say this, not to be shady. She's very hot. I want everyone to know this because everyone gets super sensitive when you talk about hot people, right? She's super hot. You can tell there's some work has been done.
You think?
Yeah. We're seeing the early. Did you see that these two French twins died? In France, they're like, I guess they were famous French personalities. Maybe someone could put a picture of them in Discord. And they had been like years ago, I wouldn't say handsome originally, but they were like, they looked one way 30 years ago and now look like, you know, and they died, both of coronavirus. They were anti-vaxxers.
Okay.
And I think we're seeing the future of, Alyssa Hunter and those twins. I think that's what she'll look like in 20 years.
Okay, but, I've seen pictures of them before.
Yeah.
Lauren S. just posted a picture of them. They're both dead?
Yeah, they both died within a few days of each other.
Oh.
Yeah. And so... Oh, Travi says that the twins said that they never had any work done.
Yeah. I don't think that's necessarily the case. And they both look like they're plotting to take over Gotham City.
Yeah, so they really, really do. Yeah. And so, but still at this stage is very, very handsome.
Yes.
Thank you. The other thing I like is, you know, this is the first cast I have seen since I can remember, even though season 12 might have been like, I don't remember though. We've only seen half of them, but this half of the cast is very likable. I don't think there's anybody I'm like, ugh, you know? And I think one of the things that we love about cornbread is it's buttery and delicious, but then also the drag queen is, and I was thinking about this yesterday, is the show has a history of putting on plus size queens who are very extra.
Yes.
And this is
one comes to mind that I could see people comparing her to.
but even not just Silky, even Eureka was extra, you know? Mm-hmm. And Cornbread comes into it with an authenticity that she's funny and she's, you know, affable and charismatic, but not in a way that's extra and in your face.
Right. She's in on the joke.
Yes.
She's aware. She's very aware.
And she's very natural on camera.
Natural,
and
yes.
It seems like someone you would just know.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, so the cast, but this goes for all the cast. There's one in particular that I'm going to talk about that I'm fascinated by, you know? But none of them are unlikable, you know?
Yeah.
So that's
even the ones that, like, we went in to meet the queens feeling a certain way about a queen. And while there was some annoyance to her, she wasn't mad.
Yeah.
If given time, had she stuck around, she might have become more likable as time went on.
Yeah. The thing I didn't like, and this is actually something I think that you liked about the episode. I feel we've seen this episode 100 times. I'm not sure I'll remember it.
I agree with you and disagree with you in that we've seen talent shows, but the talent shows have always been all-star girls. Whereas this is the first time we've seen this with, so it wasn't just where you're all going to create lyrics for my new hit single, and then they do a song that just sort of promotes a Rue song.
Yeah.
And so this was at least something slightly different. It wasn't that whole, we're going to put a bunch of girls who don't know each other in a room, and there's going to be arguments over who's going to take over the choreo, and who's got a good singing voice versus who doesn't, and they'll have them all to do their own thing, and for us to fall in love with queens because of their individuality, not because they had to jam, you know, 4 bars into a RuPaul song.
So anyway, I think it was a very decent start to the season. It wasn't, but that could be a good thing or a bad thing. It could be like, well, is this it? We'll find out when the second half gets there, because it might be something that's a very pleasant, not fighty season, but it could make for boring television. Who knows? You know, we'll see.
Well, we'll see.
All right, Taylor, let's get into the workroom entrances. The first one into the workroom was Alyssa Hunter. She's 26 from Cataño, Puerto Rico. She came in and said, hola, I hope you guys are ready to be slayed because it's hunting season, bitches. Your thoughts on Alyssa Hunter?
Definitely cute as a boy. I would agree with you. Definitely had some work done. We are very... I didn't like the look. I wasn't crazy about the look. And I think if you're going to come in with a bow and arrow, look like you know how to use a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
Like, it just seemed very, where she seemed to be almost struggling with it, and the dimensions were off, but very polished, I thought, even though I didn't like the look. I thought everything about her was, I thought, very polished throughout the episode, mm-hmm. sometimes to her disadvantage, but we'll talk about that as it goes on.
You know, I think this is sort of related to what you were saying, is I don't have anything wrong with her. I don't know why this is. This is definitely a thing that the Puerto Rican queens tend to do. Not all of them, but I'm thinking back to like Anisha. No, Anisha wasn't from Puerto Rico. Who was? Oh no, Candy Ho was like mm-hmm. this, where they come in and they're like, "I'm from Puerto Rico, and therefore I'm all of that." Which I'm like, has a Puerto Rican queen even won? Like, why are they acting like you should bow down because I'm Puerto Rican, or that you should bow down because I'm a pageant queen? I will say pageant queens tend to do very well on this show, but it's not a guarantee of success. And so, I don't know. There was sort of this, like, lack of humility, which was unusual. We've seen before, but with this cast was sort of unusual. I will say she did read the room and adapt. But she came in with a little bit of that fronting, if you will. All right, next we have Bosco. She's 28 from Seattle, Washington. She came in and said, "All right, let's get out there today and make a difference." She's known as the Demon Queen of Seattle and has performed everything from Sylvia Plath monologues to burlesque. Taylor, your thoughts on Bosco?
I love Bosco. I liked her Meet the Queens video, and I was glad to see that. One, I liked the outfit. I thought the outfit was a fun entrance look. But throughout the episode, she seems very smart and very quick. Mm-hmm. And I very much appreciate that. And I mean, the eyebrows are odd, but I think if that's her signature thing, and ultimately you immediately recognize her right away. She seems very she knows her fashion. She knows her silhouette, everything. But I have no complaints about Bosco. Mm-hmm. I was very pleased with her episode.
I'm a big Bosco fan too. I wasn't as impressed with her Meet the Queens, but was more impressed with her in this one. She also had, and I don't know why, it could be her charisma or whatnot. I found her attractive. Even though she wasn't traditionally attractive, there was something attractive to me about her.
In drag or as a boy?
As a boy.
Okay.
Oh, but also beautiful and drag in that burlesque number, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about that burlesque number in the talent show.
Yeah. Next, we have Cornbread the Snack Jete, 29 years old from Los Angeles. She came in and said, "Is you hungry? Because, bitch, I'm baked." I don't think you liked her, right, Taylor?
No, I didn't like her at all. I wrote down, "I'm this fat in person" was going to be clip zero, but then I thought that was too obvious. You would know that I would be expecting that.
Yeah.
But talk about charisma. She's just charisma personified as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Very charismatic. Like, again, like I said, which is great. Not in a way that's in your face. And like, she's not carrying Miley Cyrus around the workroom or anything like that.
Yeah.
So. Well, they were probably still
makes me mad when I think about that.
Well, they were probably prepared for that. Notice how they kept Lizzo far away from the queens. And next week we saw that that they have what's her name?
Alicia Keys.
Alicia Keys behind the mirror. They're like, "We don't want you anywhere near these bitches. You're gonna start carrying them around the workroom."
Really was the last time. No, because Ricky Martin was on the next, but he stood next to Rue the whole time.
Ricky Martin came on the show?
Ricky Martin was on, was that last season or the season before? He was the first judge. And they did La Vida Loca as the song.
Oh, God. It shows you how much
chat room, what season was Ricky Martin on, the first episode of the season?
I don't remember this. It's so funny.
Apparently he had on dad cargo pants. That's what Travis Cosmos just said. Season 12.
Oh, season 12. He was on for season 12. There you go. Willow Pill. She's 26 years old from Denver, Colorado. She came in and said, "Where am I?" She sees herself as an adorably twisted little doll. Other quiggins were reading her bitchy entrance look, and she hadn't been in drag in a year because of COVID. Taylor, your thoughts on Willow Pill?
I think that she may be the one, maybe not the one to watch, but one to watch. this season, because what we, I watched the Meet the Queens, not Meet the Queens, the first act on YouTube earlier in the week.
Yeah.
And with the shirt that spelled Angel wrong and the flip flops and the dropping the glasses and everything like that, I thought, oh, well, if she's not the first one to go, she's going to be in the bottom two that has to lip sync for her life. And then as we watched over the course of the episode, and as they talked about it Untucked, that was a strategy on her part. Mm-hmm. So that's something where I'm like, okay, I was not all about you, but now I'm curious. Now I want to see what you're going to do the rest of the season, however long you're here for.
So I got to be honest with you. As people who listen to Meet the Queens know, I do not like this, did not or do not like this Willow Pill. Mm-hmm. I will say I'm not one of these people, because as I famously say, by famously, I know I say this, that's it. I call balls and strikes. Okay?
Okay.
And I will not say, because I know that I feel like the show is trying to push Willow Pill on us. Okay?
Okay.
And what I will say is, okay, I don't have the hatred that I had for her after I Meet the Queens, right?
Uh-huh.
But it's not and I like her. I'm very, puzzled by her. I don't know what to make of her. And to go to a Golden Girls reference, it's only one that, unless you're a big Golden, well, you don't have to be a big Golden Girls fan to know this, but to immediately cite this reference. Last night I was thinking about the way I looked at the screen when Willow Pill came on was, in season one, there's an episode called A Little Romance, where Rose dates a little person who's a psychiatrist.
Right.
And they're all talking to him in the living room, and Sophia walks in, and she just stares at him. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because, you know, like, you don't, they're, you're writing the jokes in your head.
Right.
And then there's a long pause. They stare at her like, oh no, what is she going to say? And then she says, Dorothy, right, can I see you in the kitchen? Right.
But says it away from the camera as she's walking.
Yeah.
That's the best part.
Yeah. And that look that Sophia has in her face when she sees Dr. Jonathan something.
Jonathan. About. Yeah. Newman. Dr. Jonathan Newman.
Yes. That is the look the entire time that I had on my face when Willow Pill was on the screen. Right? But okay, if you would have been in the room with you, I would have been, Taylor, can I talk to you in the kitchen? Right? And I don't know what to... I mean, that's what I will say. That's the compliment I'll give, is that it went from hatred to, like, I now stare at Willow Pill the way Sophia stared at Dr. Jonathan Newman. Okay? I don't know what to make of this person. I don't.
Yeah.
And I am very curious. I will say this, though.
Yeah.
I'm very curious to see what happens next.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
My boyfriend went to a friend's house and watched the episode and was over the moon about Willow Pill. Loves Willow Pill. Might be his favorite queen of the season, you know?
Really?
Yeah, okay. He's in love with... No. Cornbread's his favorite. But Willow Pill, he thought Willow Pill should have won the whole thing today. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I agree with that.
But. Yeah. Uh-oh. Well, now you're going to hear about this later. First you, now me. Now imagining when your husband hears this in the car with you later. And that awkwardness. All right. Next in the workroom, we have Carrie. Well, you know what? Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Why don't we do this? Why don't we take a break right here? And we come back. We'll talk about the rest of the queens. We're going to take a break and we will come back right after this.
One of the season.
We are are back and we are talking about Carrie Colby, 24 years old from Los Angeles. She came in, she said, I have one thing to say. Baby, you already know that a kiss begins with a K. She is a transgender woman. She was wearing trans pride colors, actually, in her outfit. She knows cornbread from the LA drag scene. Her drag mother is icon Sasha Colby, a well-known Miss Continental winner. Taylor Lante Boy, your thoughts on Carrie Colby?
The first thing I wrote was, Jesus, she's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about a beautiful woman. I kept picturing the Kennedy in the Untucked going, but she's beautiful. Uh-huh. Talk about polish. Mm-hmm. Absolutely polished and poised and gorgeous. I love the hair, the different colored hair, mm-hmm. And the outfit. I have been listening to another podcast that talks about the pageant circuit. So I was from when she said Sasha Colby, I knew what they were talking about, as well as the importance of Miss Continental. Uh-huh. So I was like, oh, she comes from that line of Colbys. So she's definitely, as of right now with this episode, she's definitely a front runner as far as I'm concerned.
I would usually say no, but RuPaul does love someone who is beautiful and statuesque.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, I think, get a lot of leeway when they're not so strong in other ways. By the way, a little bit of a correction. My boyfriend is listening live, I guess, and weighed in on the chat room to announce that Willow Pill is his favorite, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
you're wrong. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
All right. Carrie Colby, yes. Beautiful. I don't know that we got a lot of who she is. And one of my worries is that we have seen who she is. There's probably not a lot there in terms of charisma. Her charisma seems to be her looks, but maybe I could be wrong.
My worry is that we are going to get where they're going to feel the only way to kind of open that up is to make her look foolish.
Mm-hmm.
Or to kind of where she's going to have to do something where they're purposely going to try to dumb her down or make mm-hmm. her act the fool, like in a skit or in something else. And that she is going to really struggle with that because that doesn't appear to be who she is.
Mm-hmm. People are weighing in on the chat and they think she's completely beautiful, which I mean,
yes.
there's no denying that. I mean, she is stunning. Mm-hmm. All right. Next, we have June Jambalaya, 29 years old from Los Angeles. She said, grab a fork, ladies. Jambalaya is served. Cornbread knows her. They seem to be good Judies. She is the love child of Megan Thee Stallion and Phaedra Parks, as she self-describes. And Cornbread calls her a label whore. Your thoughts on June Jambalaya, Taylor?
I loved June in the Meet the Queens.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved her in this episode. I loved her mm-hmm. in this episode. I loved her on a talk. She is one of my favorites of the season so far. That look when she came in was not my favorite. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem to be what you expect for your first look when you walk into the workroom. Mm-hmm. It seemed kind of pedestrian. I know it was some label. It was some name brand jumper, mm-hmm. but it didn't seem well-fitting. I don't know, but I think she is gorgeous as a queen and cute as a boy too. I think that she's just I like everything about her.
I worry that this show works in terms of tropes and character types, and that's not mm-hmm. just true with the black queens. It could be with the Latin queens. It could be with the pageant queens and the comedy queens and whatever. But if there seems to be one that's more standout than the other, then the one who's also like that can sort of get lost. Like, for instance, before we go to the fact that there's two big girl black queens, I feel right now at this stage, Bosco's quirkiness isn't coming out as much because Willow Pill seems to be taking that slot. And I think in this one, Cornbread's charisma seems to be outshining June's, and June seems to be a little bit more of a shrinking violet around Cornbread. And I think she needs to come out and maybe we'll see that in future episodes. I think I would be like that actually at first. And when I'm in a new situation, I'm a little quieter. And so, yeah. We're going to need to take some time for June to get acclimated. I don't think we've seen the last of June Jambalaya. I don't think she's a filler queen. No, not at all. Cause someone might get that impression cause she was in the bottom two, but I don't get that. I never had that impression of her. And so I'm very curious to see if she can carve out her own space in the competition. So, that'd be very interesting to see. Finally into the workroom, we have Orion Story. She's 25 years old from Grand Rapids, Michigan. She came in screeching, and then she said on a cheeseburger cell phone, hello, RuPaul, we've been trying to reach you regarding your car's extended warranty. Oh, perfect. Well, then I just have one question for you. Are you ready, Boots? She describes herself as a campy queen. She loves puppets and bright colors, and she's influenced by Barbarella and Sesame Street. Which also, that's how I met Taylor. He said the same thing. your thoughts on Orion's story?
I wrote, she said, I want to start off obnoxious. And to which I wrote, well, she succeeded with that.
Yeah.
I was not necessarily really impressed with her opening, her catchphrase or whatever you want to call it. And she seemed very awkward from the get-go. She seemed very much of where she was like almost – she had rehearsed it. She rehearsed her opening so many times that when she finally said it, she kind of almost tripped on her words and it didn't feel believable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that could have been a funny, hello, RuPaul. We want to talk with you about – we've been trying to reach you about your extended car warranty. But it could have been done in a way that I think it had a little bit more punch to it. And when it didn't and it just kind of fell apart, I was not necessarily all that impressed.
On Drag Race UK season 3, there was a drag queen named Charity Case. And sort of the buzz about her was, well, why? She's on the wrong show. She should be on Dragula. Okay?
Yes.
She's more of a Dragula queen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say the same thing for Orion Story, but somehow a camp Wanakiki queen made it onto RuPaul's Drag Race.
Damn!
This bitch applied for the wrong show.
Okay.
She should have been on Camp Wanakiki.
That is an excellent, for those who actually know what Camp Wanakiki is, that is an excellent, excellent analogy. Yeah. Well done. Kudos.
Yeah. Well, you know, it must be some sort of Midwestern aesthetic because all of Camp Wanakiki girls are from the Michigan, Illinois, sort of upper Midwest, northern Midwest sort of area. And they seem to have that like sloppy drag, their own weird version of camp that I don't really think is camp. It's more
don't
like,
you know,
yeah, that kind like, yeah, of, like yeah, like clownish, right?
Yes.
And not funny. And, yeah, I don't get it, but it's a very Camp Wanakiki aesthetic. And I think she went into the wrong show. So there was a thing was when I first saw her on Meet the Queens, I was like, oh my God, she is going to be a cute boy.
Uh-huh.
Oh, but you know, we never finished that story in the beginning. If you go to the Drag Race Recap on Twitter, you can look it up. Orion's story, when I wrote, is it going to be a season that she replied to me? And she said something about like, yeah, shitting and pissing or something like that, or shitting and farting. Shitting and farting. Like, oh, okay.
But she spelled it S-H-I-D-D-I-N-G and F-A-R-D-I-N-G.
Yeah. And I was like, oh God. I was just embarrassed for her that responded to me. So, everyone's like, oh, she's not cute. I thought she was going to be cute as a boy based on her Meet the Queens look. And then people were telling me, oh, she's not cute as a boy. And I saw she had this weird ass emo Phillips hair. I didn't know what was going on there. And then
a name no one has said in 30 years.
And so, look, I'm just stealing. That's the thing that you usually do. You're the one.
Who no, you're up, right.
Like, a Morgan Fairchild reference. So, but then when she was on this table visits and she had on a camera, I'm like, oh, wait, she's actually pretty cute. It's her hair.
Yeah.
She has hair problems. Yeah. All right. Well, those are the entrances. Do you have anything on the workroom entrances?
Well, I have two questions for you, one of which would be really us more getting into the heads of the contestants.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote, do you think that they were happy to see more than one girl when they all came in? Like when Cornbread walked in, or when Cornbread walked in and there were already two girls there, they immediately knew, okay, so I'm not going to have to do a head-to-head like they did the last season.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. You're probably right. They probably were a little relieved.
And do you think that pissed off the season 13 girls watching the show last night of the, why the fuck didn't they have to go against the head-to-head against
each other? Yeah. That's a really good point. I didn't even think about that. All right, let's go to the mini challenge. RuPaul into the workroom and reveals there will be two premieres, and one queen from the first seven will be asked to sashay away. For the mini challenge, the girls are strapped to the lip sync for the crown wheel and spun around while they attempt to serve face in a photo shoot. This sentence didn't end. To serve face in a photo shoot. There we go.
Yeah.
After the spin cycle, Carrie Colby is named the winner of the mini challenge. Your thoughts on this mini challenge, Taylor the Latte Boy?
I love when they do a mini challenge like this for the first episode. We've mm-hmm. seen this happen on multiple seasons, and it seems to have gone away for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember that the girls on season 4 had to go on the spinning wheel while they were getting, I think, shot with paint. We've seen season 6 where girls had to jump into the huge container with the foam cubes or whatever, so they were leaping in front of a big TV screen.
Mm-hmm.
I also know that season 5 they had to shoot things underwater.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my question is, where's Mike Ruiz? Because Ruiz was always the one who did it before,
and he's become quite the sort of like internet sensation go-to daddy.
Yeah, so it makes sense that he would want to hitch his wagon to Drag Race for mm-hmm. even more stuff like that. But I thought for the most part, a lot of them did really well. I'm surprised that Carrie won. I was surprised too. I thought that other girls did better.
Mm-hmm.
I also love that when Cornbread was doing her thing, and we see this a couple of times with other queens, the laugh that Rue is giving while Cornbread is doing hers and the wheel is spinning by itself seemed genuine.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like a genuine laugh. So, and as much as we talk about the monster that is RuPaul, when she does have that really genuine laugh, that is always very infectious and joyous to watch.
It is. I completely agree. I was very happy to see this. I like the old school. It's one of the things I wish they brought back more, which maybe they are. I like the old school. It's simple. We know. We expect it. The silly photo shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, RuPaul was there. There's been a time where like they've been doing it, but it's like Ross or something like that. But RuPaul was there, and they got to interact with her. And I like that old school sort of mini challenge. Also, nice to have the pit crew back. You know, they weren't in person last year, so it's nice to see them back in person. Maybe we'll see them more. You know,
No. Oh my God, you're right.
No, the pit crew wasn't there last season in person. They did these weird videos where they were doing things on video.
Like, are you smarter than a pit crew member?
Something like that, yeah. Really.
Yeah, okay. Know. Oh, interesting. Yeah. All right.
Let's talk about Willow Pill. There's a part, and this is a good opportunity for me to tell a story, where RuPaul tells her she looks like a young Angeline. Well, first of all, do you know who Angeline is?
Yes.
Okay.
You and I have had conversations about Angeline.
So Angeline is sort of an L.A. thing, but like kind of famous maybe outside of L.A. It's really weird. So in the 80s, like the early 80s, L.A. had this weird thing happen where there was these billboards that went up all over Los Angeles of they were cryptic. It was just like a crazy, I wouldn't say crazy hot, but a crazy, hot girl posing seductively, and there would be various ones, you know,
right,
top of a car or something like that. And they were just, and all it would say was Angeline. And these billboards mm-hmm. were everywhere in LA. No one knew what they were, right? And it turned out, we don't know that much about her still, but there was this model who married or dated some super rich old man, and she was trying to be famous. And they think she'd be on billboards, on like bus stops and stuff like that. She was everywhere. And they were going to try and promote her career by putting her billboard all over Los Angeles. And it sort of became part of the LA landscape, especially in the 80s. And then she sort of disappeared. And now, and she would always, you see her around LA driving a pink Corvette, you know? And so now she still drives around in a pink Corvette, but she's now, you know, speaking of Alyssa Hunter and the plastic surgery, like, well into her 70s, and has had a ton of work done and looks like a crazy person. And I think one of the sort of like bucket list in LA is to have your spotting Angeline story in the wild, right?
Yeah.
Which I have had a couple, and one famously, I was in Malibu. I didn't know it, but there was a crazy old lady in front of me in the register, right? And she was wearing like Uggs and just had sunglasses on. I just was like, but you know, in Malibu, you see that kind of crazy shit all the time. And I wasn't even paying attention until the cashier was like, you know what? I don't feel comfortable doing this. And then walked around the front and took all the alcohol out of this woman's shopping cart and said, I'm not going to sell to you. And she's like, what are you doing? Put those back. Listen, you know, they started fighting with her. And she was like, you got to leave. And the woman stormed out. And I was like, a whole scene. And
what?
Yeah.
And how have I never heard this story before?
You've never heard this story?
I didn't. No, I've never heard you tell me this story before.
Oh yeah, I told her I'm catching up. And then whatever, I was like, oh, I didn't, but it was too uncomfortable. I didn't say anything. And then the bag boy, cause the woman said, go make sure she leaves or something like that. Right. And then he comes back as I'm checking out and he goes, she left. And he goes, she had a pink Corvette. And then the woman goes, ugh, it's Angeline. She comes in here all the time. And I was like, because the other thing too with Angeline, the reason I wouldn't recognize her is now because she's so, wants to keep this illusion. If you see pictures of her now, she hides her face with a fan. So when you see pictures of her, she has a fan, she hides her face. So I was like, oh, I saw Angeline in real life. And so that was one of my favorite Angeline stories, was seeing her.
She was in a picture. One of the billboards was in the opening of Moonlighting.
Yes, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like, you know, there's a ride in Disney World called Rock and Roller Coaster and they go through LA. I'm surprised there wasn't like an Angeline billboard there. Usually when you would see, not anymore, when you would see older versions of the LA skyline, they would put an Angeline billboard in there. It sort of became a fixture of the LA skyline when it was artistically depicted.
Yeah.
Bosco on her, on the Winnie, on the spinning wheel, loved her. I thought she was so funny and so great.
I wrote quick on her feet.
Yes, very quick on her feet. And, I also wrote that Cornbread was very likable and I was laughing along with Rue and Cornbread. And like you, I thought Carrie Colby's win was a little on the nose, a little too obvious.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was hoping for something more. All right, let's move on. Next, RuPaul announced the Maxi Challenge. Each queen will have to bring their top routine to the Charisma, Nerve, and Talent show. In the workroom, the queens meet each other out of drag. Alyssa crowns herself the trade of the season. Everyone thinks Willow looks like a literal child. And Cornbread trolls the other queens into believing her talent show performance will be competitive eating. Taylor, any thoughts on anything that happened in the workroom?
Again, Cornbread's reaction to Alyssa was very funny and seemed just, she is aware. She seems very aware to me that this is an opportunity for me to make a moment, but not a moment like, and I don't want to necessarily compare her to the previous queen of where I'm going to have a moment by screaming attitude check every 10 minutes. You know, this is where we have this moment. Yeah. Where we're going to have this and it's this funny thing. And then even like the callback to the flip flops, just shit like that is just, she's very, very good. Alyssa is cute as a boy. And I think that they were all very pleasantly surprised when she took off all of her makeup that they were all like, damn. The Cornbread with the eating thing I thought was very, very funny because at one point you kind of thought, is she going to do that?
She did play it for real. I will say, In the confessional, where there's good lighting and makeup and stuff like that, they do show Alyssa Hunter. But I will say in the workroom, they only do very quick cuts of Alyssa. They don't want you looking too long at her. Because I think that they know you'll see, they want to keep the illusion of her being a really hot boy. Okay, I think if you look too long at her, you'll start to see the plastic surgery. You know?
The flaws. Yeah.
Speaking of, let's talk about Willow Pill. I'm already anticipating I'll get some sort of hate, but people already hate me, so I don't know. Getting fucking light. I'm going to ask this in the nicest way possible. What is going on with her face?
That, okay. Well, she talks about that in her table interview with Rue, that she has a disease, which I think is the reason that her face is the way it is and the way that she, right, the reason that she looks younger than she does, which we know when Rue says at one point, so, you know, where she says, I had a chronic illness, and Rue says in this really weird tone, what was your chronic illness? Like, where she like yells it at her. It was very uncomfortable. I forget what she said that it is. Cystinosis. J. Thomas Plank just wrote in the Discord. And sometimes when people are born with chronic illnesses or diseases, that it affects their faces, it affects their body shape, it affects that sort of stuff. So I am going to assume that is the reason why.
It could be. The reason I asked was, and I considered it as an option, but like Alyssa Hunter, it does look like there's been work done, but I don't know if it's because of the disease or she's actually had work done. I don't know. Because it reminds me of, like, Blair St. Clair and All-Star 6 looked like a crazy person with all the work she has done. It's weird because I know the advice is to get work done while you're young, but maybe a little bit of work done. But, like, Blair St. Clair has the amount of work done that a 45-year-old socialite has.
Right.
And she's, like, 20-nothing.
I don't get work from Willow. Okay. I think that just may be a product of the cystinosis.
All right. Very good. Well, you know, as Taylor, the reason I asked Taylor is he's the author of the book, The Mirror Has Two Faces by Taylor the Latte Boy DDS. And it's all about this very topic. And so he is quite the, we can go on Amazon and get that. All right, Taylor. Now let's go on to the table visits. RuPaul entered the workroom to check in with the queens. Carrie Colby reprises her champion jump roping routine. June Jambalaya identifies as Clatchet, and Willow Pill lists her illnesses. Your thoughts on the table visits?
Well, what do you remember the Colbys?
No, but I did think of you when they mentioned it. I'm like, oh, Taylor's losing his shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I was more of a CBS girl, so I liked Dallas and Falcon Crest. But whereas I know I had other little, we all eventually came out as gay, but that they were big Dynasty fans. And then when there was the spinoff, that was the Colbys, that was a big thing. But at one point when she makes a joke about Colby Co. later on, that was the company, obviously. That was on the Colbys, so I thought that was interesting. I don't really have any notes about June's visit, but I did talk about with Willow. I wrote, let's throw out Evie's name as quickly as possible so that everybody knows that there's that connection there.
Yeah.
As well as the chronic illness, which I agree with you, what you said earlier, as far as that we want you to love her as much as Rue seems to love her. So we're going to throw out, you know, everybody's favorite oddball, and we're going to throw out that she has this disease and all of these different things to kind of get that going. The one thing that I thought of is, on at least twice, possibly three times during the show, it feels like Rue is trying out her new catchphrase because she's run out of songs that she can write about all the catchphrases. And that would be, I'll be the judge of that.
Oh.
Have you seen the clip from her on the Graham Norton show?
No.
Where she talks about something that you can say whenever you want to get out of a conversation or that you don't necessarily want to like continue a conversation or something like that is, and it's very funny because she says, I have a couple of things that I really like to say. and one of which is where she can't remember this one, but she goes, oh, I know, I'll be the judge of that. I'll be the judge of that. Like, it's something that she thinks is quippy and you can use in any conversation. And then Graham Norton tells a story about something that Lucille Ball used to say at dinner parties, where when somebody would leave the room and then come back and sit at the table, she would turn to somebody else and say, now say it to her face. So as a way to kind of start a joke. So, and Rue thinks that's very funny. So I have a feeling that we're going to be getting a song at some point saying, well, I'll be the judge of that in the near future.
Yeah, 100%. That's a very good clocking there, Taylor. Detective Taylor on the case. I don't have much about the table visits. You know, there's a point where Carrie Colby is talking about how she's going to do jump roping, and she was a champion jump roper. And she goes, I haven't touched a jump rope in 10 years. I'm all, yeah, you have. That's 100% a lie. You're telling me that you chose this to do for your talent show and that you didn't even try once to jump rope? To see, yeah. Is this something I can still do? You're going to wait until the moment that's important to, well, this is the first time I'm doing it in 10 years. I'm like, no, it's not true. Orion's story. Oh, I already said that she's cute and that awful hair. And then again, I had with Willow Pill. What the fuck is going on? Like, I don't know what's going on. maybe by the end of the season, I'll be the biggest Willow Pill fan. I did think it was cute. I don't know if it comes out at this point that, Alyssa Hunter thought her name was Willow Pillow. And that was very, very funny. All right. Well, let's actually talk about the charisma uniqueness. I mean, I'm not uniqueness, the charisma, nerve, and talent show. The queens took the stage to showcase their talents and impress the judges. First up was June Jambalaya. She did an African dance. Your thoughts on that, Taylor?
Well, before we get talking about that, I have a couple of other notes about when Lizzo came in.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
And did you get the outfit reference when she walked in?
No.
Did you get it at all?
No.
She's dressed like Tina Turner in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Oh, well, I know Rue made that joke on the main stage, but I thought she was just making it like, oh, that reminds me of that. But she really is dressed like.
Yeah. Yeah, if you look at pictures of Tina Turner, I mean, the hair is different. Mm-hmm. But I still am an enormous Tina Turner fan. Mm-hmm. So when she walked in, I immediately clocked that and was like, I wonder if Joe's going to get that or not.
No.
But so a great, great idea for an outfit. And surprised that a queen has never done that before in the history of the show.
Oh, hold on for a second. You reminded me. I made a mistake. I skipped a segment. Sorry. Let me beat it and we'll come back. It's elimination day and the queens get ready for their talent show performances. Cornbread, you know, sages away evil spirits and tells the story of farting on a pastor. Carrie praises the diversity in the first group of queens. And Lizzo comes to the workroom to inspire the queens. That is what you're talking about, Taylor. Beautiful.
Yes.
Okay, go on.
Though that was pretty much it. As far as before, the farting story was very funny. I think, again, I'm not necessarily a huge bathroom humor fan, but that still is that the way that Cornbread told the story made her very endearing to I think a lot of people, including the folks in the workroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Rue doing this new song, lip syncing before, which I love this song.
Oh,
I
saw the video.
Oh yeah. No, the video for this came out. She released a couple of videos a few weeks ago for this and another song that I cannot remember, which is really just kind of a ripoff of Call Me Mother, but I still love it. But this song in particular has a very 90s dance vibe to it, which I'm all about. It reminds me of the type of song that I would have been listening to kind of wind down for the night after going out to the bars. Like, and it's I really, really like the song. So
what about the dancers?
Dancers were not bad to look at either.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at one point though, when it's clear that they all know the dance moves and at one point they're all walking and Rue looks like she's trying to catch up to the four of them.
That's always RuPaul's dancing. She's just walking forward. She can't dance.
Right.
It's a horrible dancer.
Yeah, I know. We both commented on how much weight Ross looks like he's lost.
Well, also, Altino Shade obviously has that deflated balloon look because I noticed that she had the Barbara Walters lens on this season, this episode as well.
Ross did?
Mm-hmm.
I did not notice that.
Yeah, the lens was a little blurry for Miss Matthews.
Miss Matthews. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Good. Detective Batance.
Detective Batance. I mean, why can't I see Ross? I couldn't see him.
What's wrong with my eyes?
Yeah. All right, now let's talk about... I have nothing to say about Elimination Day. Let's talk about the Charisma, Nerve, and Talent show. The first one I had was June Jambalaya. She did an African dance. Your thoughts here on that, Taylor?
I definitely see what they were saying as far as the headband, and you could see her getting into her head.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought the energy was super high energy, mm-hmm. and it was enjoyable to watch.
Mm-hmm.
It almost looks like she was losing steam by the end of it, though.
Mm-hmm.
And that might have been more her, where she was overthinking what she was doing or whatever. So that was a little disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought as an art form, mm-hmm. I thought that it was amazing and very, very pretty.
Yeah, I don't have the cultural literacy of African dance to judge either way whether it was great African dancing. But I will say she did at least exhibit a talent. When they do these talent shows, I am not a fan of the I'm going to lip sync, whether it be an original song or to a regular song. I'm like, well, but you got to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. You know? That would be if we had the Afterthought Media talent show. My talent was, you know, I'm going to talk into a microphone, you know?
Yeah.
So, what I was going to say is so I appreciated that it was something different. I also don't think that the headband falling into her hair was that big of a deal, not to bring her into bottom two. So I have thoughts, and we'll get to when we get to the lip sync, remind me to tell you of why I think she was there. I think overall she was just fine.
Yeah, you know, I have thoughts fine. About the lip sync too that I said to my husband last night, but yeah, we'll definitely get there.
And all right, next we have Bosco. Now Bosco did a flower petal burlesque routine. Did you have any big thoughts on Bosco's flower petal burlesque routine?
One of the things that I like about Bosco is that she is so polished for kind of being the quirky queen. Mm-hmm. She's not the messy queen.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought everything, it was clear that she knew this routine down to the pedal, mm-hmm. as it were. And I thought it was incredibly sexy. Everything about it, I thought, was just very, very sexy, very, very well done, and could have seen her as one of the top, possibly could have winning the talent show.
Well, the judges obviously agree with you. I guess my question, what I would need a clarification, I want to be very specific when I say this. I'm not saying that burlesque isn't a talent. Dita Von Teese has made a career out of it. And I know that what's her name from season 7? Violet Chachki does burlesque in a way that requires a lot of, you know, gymnastics and whatnot. But from what I saw from Bosco, I don't understand. It's just you wore an outfit that you bought. And you went out there and took it off. And I see it as an art, but I don't know if I necessarily see it as a talent. And that's why I was sort of curious. Not that it was a beautiful art piece that we saw happen. But again, I don't know if that was necessarily quote unquote a talent, but maybe I am not informed enough and I could be wrong.
I think because there is what you are doing. Okay. And again, I am not well versed in this, but I've seen enough burlesque to go, you're almost telling a story and there's a choreography to how you take the clothes off,
mm-hmm.
versus stripping, which mm-hmm. is really just kind of the story there isn't as there's a subtlety to this where it's not just where suddenly, you know, and there's all your junk kind of thing. It's where you're constantly, it's walking that fine line between removing all of the clothing, but doing it in a way that you want to see more. But I'm not going to give you as much as you want to see just yet.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like a lot of times with, like, you know, strippers and stuff, it's a little more in your face, as it were.
All right. Alyssa Hunter did air guitar, as best I can put it. What would Luke has it here is a punk metal lip sync. What were your thoughts on Alyssa Hunter?
Well, she kept talking about how she was going to play the guitar.
Yeah.
And then when she grabbed the guitar, didn't even seem like she was holding it correctly or that she didn't know how to even like pretend to play air guitar sort of thing. So in that regards, I was very let down. I appreciate the fact, and I think they talk about it during the judges tape critiques, that she did a hard rock song, which is not something that usually everything with Drag Race is dance pop or R&B. So in that regard, I can appreciate that, but it, the execution, and she looked great, but the execution was not there.
Yeah, I thought it was awful. I mean, that's not a talent. Again, it's just lip syncing to a hard rock song and playing air guitar, which I think people what the Straight Boys did in my junior high lip sync. Carrie Colby did jump rope and lip sync. Taylor, your thoughts on that?
I wrote fun. That's all I wrote, was just the word. It was fun. I mean, it was fine, middle of the road kind of stuff.
Yeah. I do agree with Ross, and I had this in my notes, that she should have started with the jump roping. We didn't need the lip sync, or maybe she could have lip sync while she was jump roping. It seemed like it took a long time to get to the jump rope.
Like almost come out with just the basic jump rope.
Yeah.
You know, once you skip, once you skip. And then as the song picked up, kind of doing a lot more.
Yeah.
When was the last time you jumped rope?
When I came over to this country. You know, I had read a book actually years ago, probably 20 years ago, about, it was a guy, I wish I could find this book. It was like a little pamphlet. And it was a guy who was a personal trainer, like a high-end personal trainer. He wrote a little book and he was like, honestly, the best workout you can do is jumping rope. And it is the best workout ever for anybody, any body type, blah, 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 blah. And he was like a jump rope for fitness kind of thing. And that was the last time I jumped rope. What about you?
I was a kid. I was almost definitely a kid. I can't imagine at this point. I have coordination issues walking at times, or just standing. So the idea of jumping up and down and trying to coordinate it with the moment that a rope goes under, I don't know that. I'm not there yet. Maybe one day if I keep losing weight, maybe I'll be able to do it. But at this point, no.
All right. Next we have Orion Story did a comedy skit. Oh my God. Your thoughts?
Cringy. I just cringed the entire time. I was just so uncomfortable.
Well, somebody on Drag Race recently did a similar comedy skit, right?
Well, Crystal Method did the aerobics instructor.
That's right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that there's that. So in that regards, we've already kind of seen that. But I guess anytime you do something, like I don't remember. I remember Crystal won that challenge, and I don't quite understand it. But at least with Crystal, I feel like there were people in the audience. When you're doing this and you're really only doing it to four judges and the six contestants, it just, you are taking such a chance. Unless you are doing something in which everybody is screaming, yelling, laughing, it almost feels like you're doing it into a vacuum. It allows the opportunity for the producers to make it look even more cringy than it might have been.
Well, I think the thing with Crystal, if I remember correctly, was there was a sort of like wink to the audience. She did it in a way that was sort of brilliant, which was, even if you didn't know who she was because you were in the audience, that there was like, I am a very feminine person the character came off as a feminine person pretending to be a masculine person. So the femininity was there, and it made it funny. Like, it was almost like a cisgendered woman pretending to be a cisgendered man, you know, for laughs. And whereas this one, Orion Story just played it as a guy. And the jokes just weren't there. It just wasn't funny. And ultimately, that's what the problem – it was literally awful. It was, again, something you would see on Camp Wanakiki.
Yes.
Finally, Cornbread did an original song. Oh, no, not finally. There's Cornbread, then there's Willow Pill. Cornbread did an original song. Your thought about that?
I liked it. I know that you were just talking about the whole idea of talent show being lip syncing and stuff, but I think the fact that she did her own song helped in that regards. Mm-hmm. And it's also, it's rare that we see drag queens. Usually drag queens release their first single after they're eliminated, but the idea that she kind of came in with a single was actually very smart on her part.
Yeah, because she's on the show. She can promote it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was fine. It's something we've seen on these all-star variety shows, so it didn't really wow me, you know? And going to what you said, I don't really know enough about her to be like, oh my God, yes, a cornbread single. But it was fine. I don't know if it was sure to deserve the win, but whatever. And then finally we had Willow Pill with her suicide performance art. What was your hot take on this one?
I didn't really get it. I guess this also kind of speaks to who I am, in that I really didn't think it was funny until she pulled out the toaster. And then for some reason, that was what made me laugh. It was just like, oh, that's where we're going with this. And you can tell Rue makes a face at one point when she's watching her where she's like, I have no fucking clue what's going on.
Yeah.
But I thought to myself, I'm like, that's going to be one of the meme, like where they usually like take pictures of Rue and they make memes out of it. That's going to be one that's going to be used with like, I don't understand what's happening, but I'm here for it kind of thing. That I thought was, I don't quite get all of the love, but Rue seems to enjoy the absurdity of it. Mm-hmm. She used that word to describe it during the judges panel. And so I have a feeling that we may be seeing Willow around for a little bit longer than you and I expected to.
I didn't get it. And I'm not saying, but I get, because so many people there got it, I'm wondering if it was an editing thing that we didn't see the whole performance, and that if you saw the entire performance there in person, that you would have a different appreciation for it. It sort of reminds me of when you see comedians, some of the funniest comedians I've ever seen are comedians who do crowd work, and they go into the crowd and they just literally, their whole act is working with the crowd and sort of making fun of them and interacting with them, right? But that style of comedy, often those comedians aren't very well known because that style of comedy doesn't play well on television.
Right.
Because there is a sort of sense of community when you're with an audience live that you don't have, there's a detachment when you're on television. So if you were to see a person do crowd work on TV, it doesn't make a lot of sense, right? But it works on in person. And I feel like it's the same thing here. I'm wondering if there was a sort of energy in the studio that the performance connected viscerally with them in a way that didn't really work on television, and the editors had a tough time trying to translate that. I will say Aiden, again, afterwards, was all praise for, loved it, thought it was so funny, thought it was so great, scream laughed when he watched it, just thought it was so great, right? I didn't get it. But again, I'm conceding it could be something that if I saw in person, I would have been like, this is the most amazing thing ever. But I didn't get it.
Well, and ultimately, I mean, we know that – I have to be careful how I word this. This group of people that enjoy watching the show can be easily triggered by things. And have no problem complaining onto the Twitterverse and onto social media about things that they find to be offensive that the girls do, even though that is really kind of, drag is supposed to be a fuck you to societal norms and that sort of thing. So when we're talking about the fact that she pulled the toaster out and that it really was kind of a piece of like where somebody is like committing suicide. I wonder if I agree with you that I wonder if there was editing so that they tried to make it as where we're getting the point across without making it where maybe there was even more absurdity to it that they couldn't show, because then you're going to get people that are saying that was triggering to me and how could you make fun of something like that and all of that sort of thing. I wouldn't be surprised if that was a part of it.
Well, there also could be a thing where there's a little bit of an element of Emperor Has No Clothes that they're all looking at Rue. Now, for Rue and her thing, and maybe some of the judges, is they've seen it all. So what's going to impress them is going to be something that is unusual and weird. And this performance, And then, like, for instance, that's why you have comedians who are comedians, because they make comedians laugh, but not necessarily the general public. And right. It could be that. And then the other drag queens are looking at Rue and the judges, in particular, seeing Rue loving it and hearing that Rue loved it on the main stage. So they're now, of course, well, I loved it too. And yeah. It could be a part where the audience has to do the same thing. And you're right. And the editors have to now convince the audience why RuPaul loved this. I don't know. I didn't. What I saw on the screen, and maybe I'll have to look at it again, I thought was very strange. And I will say this to show you the manipulative abilities of television. They could have easily, if they wanted to, made it look strange too. That's where I'm trying to really figure out where the truth lies.
Well, this could have easily been another Coco Montrese and All Stars 2.
Yes, 100%. It's exact. So for people who don't remember, Coco Montrese did a number, which, again, to her credit, not to her credit, but people don't realize is she does that act all the time, but she uses it with a song that they didn't want to pay the rights for. So they use some random-ass song, and so it made her look crazy, right?
Yeah.
But they could have easily used a song like this while she's doing her, while Willow was doing her thing. And then you're like, oh, this is.
She's bananas.
She's bananas. She's a crazy person. And then just show looks of RuPaul looking confused. And then you're like, oh, Willow Pill's a crazy person.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. So I don't know. I need to see it again. And I'll look at it with the eyes of trying to see it as the greatest thing that ever happened on that show. All right, Taylor, well, it's your favorite part of the show. It's time for the looks.
Okay.
The category is signature show stomping drag. Now, of course, this is a great time to mention that we have another show, and you'll be getting this in your feed later in a few days, called Bring It to the Runway, where our newest hosts, Christian Ochoa and Jesse Curves, are going to go through the looks and talk about the fashion in detail. But Taylor, I wouldn't want to take that away from you. Did you have any noteworthy looks that you wanted to talk about?
I loved June's look. I loved the big, long, drapey sleeves. I loved Cornbread's look. That it was funny that she had an outfit that very much complimented Lizzo's look. I also liked the color combo in Willow's. I love that. Or anytime you can incorporate lime green in anything, I'm here for it, especially with that bright blue. And I love that Michelle hated it, where she said at one point, she goes, it's making me nauseous looking at you with that color combination.
Yeah.
But those are the ones that really kind of and Bosco. I loved Bosco's look as well, with the black devil with the black wig and everything. I feel like if that is an indication of what we're going to see from Bosco, Bosco's going to be the fashion plate of the season.
What did you think, though? They kind of read June for her look.
Well, okay, they read June for the details of where you could see the padding, or you could see the shorts underneath. In that regard, I was surprised how much they went into the details of everybody's look. So early on, they usually kind of gave everybody a pass in the beginning, but so they kind of came out strong. Like everybody got some sort of critique for the most part.
Yeah.
With the exception maybe of Bosco.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she talks about that a little bit. June talks about that a little bit in Untucked, as far as there's that self confidence and not wanting to be commented, her body to be commented on by the masses who watch the show. But as far as a look goes, as far as a silhouette goes, when she first came out, I did a little gasp when she came out. Cause I just, June to me is just gorgeous. Like her makeup and her bone structure and the way she does her hair and everything about her. Mm-hmm. I just think she's so, so pretty. Mm-hmm. So I was expecting to be wowed, and I was, and I wasn't necessarily looking for the details, like looking on the sides, where you can see through the side panels, or with Cornbread, the hole in her fishnets, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on the looks?
No, that's it.
Oh, wow. All right. There we go. Those are the looks. On the main stage, RuPaul lip syncs down the runway. Later, Cornbread's named the winner of the challenge, while June Jambalaya and Orion Story are placed in the bottom two and forced to battle it out in a lip sync for their life. The song Water Me by Lizzo. In the end, June Jambalaya is told Shantae you stay, while Orion Story is asked to sashay away, leaving 13 queens in the competition. Taylor the Latte Boy, any final thoughts on the episode?
I feel like the bottom three were June, mm-hmm. Alyssa, and Orion. And I feel like they knew on some level June would blow Orion out of the water, yes, with a lip sync.
100%.
And that is why she was in the bottom two, whereas they weren't sure with Alyssa.
100%. 100%. I agree with you.
Yeah.
That's exactly the case.
Since you and I have had conversations about over multiple seasons, the reason they put Valentina in up against Nina in season mm-hmm. 9 with the whole "I'd like to keep it on, please," and then yeah. that guy. Now I sort of watch when it gets down to the bottom two. Sometimes I look at it through those lenses of where the producers are saying, "We need to get rid of this queen. Who do we know can send her home?"
Yes,
and I feel like that is what happened with June.
Yeah, because Alyssa's talent was horrible, and while they liked her look, they felt it was in contrast to who she presented in the talent, which I didn't realize that was part of the challenge, but it was something that came up. And yeah, she got worse critiques, and so in theory she should have been in the one in the bottom. There's yeah. also some it happens throughout the judges panel, but in particular there's one where when RuPaul is talking about cornbread, Michelle had said something about cornbread, which was true, actually, that the way she hadn't proportioned correctly. And so she did look, her head looked super tiny on her yeah. body, just the way it was proportioned. And RuPaul, you can tell, actually agrees with Michelle and is steadying up, but they edited it and did a really rough edit where it makes it look like that RuPaul's agreeing with Lizzo.
Uh-huh.
And that happens throughout the judges panel. You should watch out for some really look at the edit. The edit's pretty sloppy, and you can tell they cut people off to make their opinion seem one way. Maybe, in fact, that's probably why they said it was to justify why cornbread won. Because it would show RuPaul criticizing cornbread. And yeah. So there's a lot of that kind of editing throughout the entire judges panel. You should watch out for it. Anything else, Taylor the Latte Boy?
No, that's it.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of RuPaul's Drag Race Recap. Be sure to join us next week and every week as we continue to discuss, dissect, and deconstruct each and every episode, each brand new episode of RuPaul's Drag Race Season 14. So for Taylor the Latte Boy and myself,
sashay away until next week.
Thank you for listening to RuPaul's Drag Race Recap. Have something to say? Email us at dragracerecap@afterthought.media. You can also leave us a voicemail at speakpipe.com/afterthoughtmedia. For more Drag Race and LGBTQ content, support us on Patreon at patreon.com/afterthoughtmedia. Taylor has another podcast. It's called Pod is My Co-Pilot, and you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow Taylor the Latte Boy on Instagram and Twitter at PIMCTaylor. Follow Joe Batance on Instagram and Twitter at Joe Batance. This episode was produced by Luke Stamen and Zach Birch. Very special thanks to these expensive tier Patreon supporters. Agnesia Shopinska, April Pacheco, Astute Girl, Brad Coley, Coco San Pedro, Declan Prosser, Drew Brooks, E. Smith, Emma, Humble Pie, J. Thomas Plank, Jesse Harris, Lauren Eckert, Lionel Campbell, Lucy Carrasco, Luke Stamen, Nicholas Springham, Poppy Woods, Ricardo Herrera, Sarah Yu, Tom Bombs, Travis Newlin, Troy Anderson, Zach Nelson, Corinna Williamson, Elizabeth Timmer, Nikki Baker, Robert NYC, and Alexandra Sixt. Drag Race Recap is an Afterthought Media podcast.